You're listening to All Things Trek with DJ Bob and DJ Warren. Music breaks have been cut out due to copyright reasons. If you'd like to hear the music, please tune in live Saturdays from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. Pacific. That's 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Eastern on riserradio.com. All know what that sound means. It means it's once again All Things Trek here on riserradio.com. I don't know, it's your favorite time of the day.
Indeed.
4 p.m. in the west, 7 p.m. in the east, midnight across the pond in the UK, and other times in other places. So what's going on, Orin?
Things are going pretty well.
Right on. You know what? I hear the Las Vegas contest is still going on.
Yeah, I heard about that. Why don't you give me some details?
More details about that. Well, you know all about it, man.
I do, but I don't remember the exact numbers. I don't want to tell people the wrong thing.
Okay, so as you all know, there is, in fact, a contest going on for tickets to go to Las Vegas Convention. They're airline tickets, mind you. All you got to do to enter in for a chance to win them is go donate on the website. Which, unfortunately, I think is down right now. We're doing a little bit of maintenance right now. Just
down during our show, even. Makes us super pro.
Well, you know, I won't complain. You know, it just means, we're busy people. I mean, the station hasn't really officially launched yet. You know, we're still doing shows, though, because we love bringing content for you to you fine folks out there. But anyway, Las Vegas Contest. You're entering a chance to win every time you donate on the website. Ooh. That's right. When you go there, you will be able to sit down with Xander, Tosk, and Roxy, DJs on our station, and a mystery guest.
A mystery guest?
There's going to be a mystery guest.
No one has told me anything about that.
Yeah, well, you
now
know.
Now I may have to go
this
to
is what you
out
get for being out of loop board.
It's true. Now I need to go figure out how to find out who the mystery guest is. How will we ever find out if we're not there in person?
Well, we'll find out afterwards, you know.
In theory, they will tell us.
I mean, we're not going to be there because, you know, we're busy people.
It's true.
You know, we're busy doing all things Trek. You know, we're doing our jobs. I'm not saying that Xander, Roxy, and Toss don't do their jobs. They do fine jobs. You know,
going to Las Vegas? Yeah. That's part of their jobs.
Well, you know. Okay, so last week, you were called out on air.
Yes, I was. Last week, when we got to the end of our show, we started talking about Enterprise.
And how not awesome Jonathan Archer is.
I mentioned that Jonathan Archer is the worst captain in Star Trek. Or at least the worst on-screen captain in Star Trek.
That's right.
And I was asked why I think that, and like what sources I have to back that up. And at the time, I didn't have a lot of material prepared. You know, we were coming to the end of our show. We were mainly just talking. And
we were, as we always do.
As we do.
We love talking. Talking to you people, anyway.
I'm glad I was asked that question, because it motivated me to go back through Enterprise.
Oh my gosh, you're watching so much Enterprise.
I have been. It's on. Oh, by the way, for anyone who doesn't already know, all Star Trek ever is on Netflix now, except Deep Space Nine.
I know! Not Deep Space Nine. What?
I was told that Deep Space Nine will be starting in October.
Well, that's okay.
But I don't know if that's true. Someone just told me that.
Yeah. By the way, I almost forgot. There, you can interact with the show directly. I can't believe I almost forgot this, because we're supposed to be an interactive show like that. Because this is how you get called out on air, and I really enjoy hearing you get called out on air. There's a couple ways you can do it. You can email us at allthingstrek@hotmail.com. We read the email. We can do that. Actually, we're going to do that at the end of the show. We're going to go to the email account, see what email we get during the show, what we've gotten previous. Read that out on air. If it's appropriate, I don't want to be reading swear words every 5 words. You know, or I'll try to censor as best I can. And be literate, please. I really don't want to translate, you know, bad English.
You don't speak internet meaning.
Yeah. Well, I do.
You do.
I don't want to, but I do.
Foreign language to me.
Yeah. Then there's also, in Star Trek Online, you can join the chat by going /join channel. So it's channel RR, two capital R's for Riser Radio. There's also the IRC chat on the website that you can go into. Unfortunately, the website's down, so you can't really do it that way.
Can't do it yet, but you will, in theory, be able to later.
That's right. So if you guys want to tell me or Orin how wrong we are, by all means, just send something to us.
Right. But on that note, it is because of that, it's because of that that I went through and gathered all my material on Jonathan Archer and why he is the worst captain ever. And that's what we're going to be talking about today. And once we get through all that, we will also talk about some of the Star Trek ships and their various designs throughout the series.
I'm really eager to see how many other people rage at you actually during Archer, though.
Oh, I hope so. I'm ready for this. Okay, so first, there's two things that make Archer a bad captain. And the first is simply how bad he is at his job. And that's what we're going to talk about first. And the second part is him as a character, which is a little harder to quantify. But him at his job is very easy. And you can just look at all the points in the series where he has made decisions that are counter to the interests of Earth, which is, and the people that live on Earth, which are the people he is supposed to be representing.
Okay.
So the first is in the very first episode, which is Broken Bow.
Broken Bow. I thought for years that was Broken Bow.
I'm pretty sure it's called Broken Bow because Broken Bow, Colorado is the place where the Klingon lands.
No, I didn't know that or realize
that. I think that's why it's called that anyway. I haven't seen the episode.
I was thinking like Bow, like Starship Bow.
And I haven't actually watched the beginning of the episode for a while. But, you know, you can debate whether or not, because basically in this episode, a Klingon crash lands on Earth with some message for the High Council, and he's like in a coma, and the Vulcans are like, let us take care of him, we'll handle it.
Don't worry, Archer, this isn't a slight against you.
Yeah, just for reference, DJ Archer is a rad guy, and we love him, so don't get mad at us, DJ Archer. Please don't take away your precious tech powers, because we need them. But anyway, so the Vulcans are like, we'll take this Klingon, we'll deal with him, and their solution is basically to let him die, because they think that that's what a Klingon would want. And Archer calls them out on that.
That's what their culture was. That was the cultural demand for Klingons.
Well, that's what they assume the cultural demand for Klingons.
Well, that's what the Vulcans knew anyway. That's what they were telling humans.
But basically, Archer decides, no, we will take the Klingon in our new, brand new Warp 5 spacecraft back to his homeworld, and that will earn us points with the Klingons, and it will show the Vulcans that we're not total space noobs, and everyone, you know, it'll be great for everybody. And, you know, you can debate over whether or not it was a good idea to take the Enterprise out before it was ready, because it wasn't ready. It wasn't finished when they left it. It didn't have its phase cannons installed.
Nope.
It didn't have a full crew. It was missing all these spare parts. And so you can debate whether or not that was the right decision, because on the one hand, it was endangering Starfleet's most advanced ship. On the other hand, it was a very time-sensitive mission.
Right.
So, you know, that's debatable. What is not debatable is at the end of the episode, rather than go back to Earth to finish the refits, he decides to keep exploring. And again, he is in Starfleet's most expensive and most advanced ship, and arguably their only ship. Enterprise is the only Starfleet vessel we ever see until, the Columbia is finished.
Yeah, I'm not so sure it's the only starship, though. It's the only, like, Warp 5 capable ship.
I'm just saying that, like, in episodes like, the one where the giant space laser comes and takes a crack at Florida. Which episode is that?
Are you talking about the Sphere Builders?
Yeah. But, like, the preview, it's, like, at the end of Season 2, there's, like, the episode opens with a big old spaceship flying up to Earth and shooting a giant laser down Florida. And the ship is completely unopposed. Like, there are no Starfleet ships that say, hey, you can't shoot space lasers at Earth. Please stop. Nothing shows up to stop it. And, you know, like, Enterprise is also, like, the one sent on, like, all of their problem-solving missions, and, like, they don't send any help with Enterprise when they go into the Expanse after the Sphere Builders. And, like, the most important thing is that we never see another Starfleet ship. Now, obviously, in canon, there are supposed to be some. They've mentioned them a couple of times.
Right.
But the fact that we never see one is a pretty clear indication that there are a very small number of them. So, the fact that, you know, first of all, it seems like a bad decision to even send your most powerful and advanced ship out on exploration missions in the first place, but it's certainly a bad idea to do it when the ship's not finished. Like, this comes back to haunt them in Silent Enemy.
Archer didn't wait until Tuesday.
No, Archer did not wait until Tuesday. If Archer had waited until Tuesday, things would be different.
It would be different.
But, this comes up in Silent Enemy, where an alien spaceship, like, runs up and is going to ruin them.
That's still Season 1, right?
Yep, still Season 1. And it's going to ruin them for, and they really never find out why. And because they don't have their phase cannons installed, the ship, you know, just cleans their clock, and they're finally, you know, they're finally able to install their phase cannons and, like, fight the ship off. But if they had just installed them in the first place, they wouldn't have been, like, you know, so close to destruction on so many different occasions. Because, like, Enterprise's little spatial torpedoes are so dinky, it's not even funny. Like, they don't really even feel like weapons so much as just, like, you know, it's like almost, whenever I see Enterprise shoot someone with its spatial torpedoes, I feel like I'm watching someone poke someone else on Facebook. Like, that's what it seems to have roughly that same effect.
Well, I mean, it's the best weapon that they could come up with at the time, is all it was. I mean, the only thing that they had for, like, comparison was whatever the Vulcans had, right? And the Vulcans weren't helping them develop anything, more or less, right? So, you know. See, we got something from Satan's Hell. The Enterprise was their only warfighter ship until Columbia was built. All they had was small Earth defense ships, so really Enterprise was their only real ship.
Yeah, and I mean, and again, we never actually see any of those Earth defense ships, even when Earth is attacked. Like, what were they doing? I mean, I guess
staring it off, because I mean, the attack didn't take very long.
Yeah, I mean, it takes a while for... I mean, the probe had to fly up to Earth, shoot its laser, and then leave. So, like, in theory, the defense ships would be around Earth, right? I mean, were they off, like, you know, cavorting around Pluto or something? I mean, maybe. I don't know.
Maybe, yeah. I'm not in charge of Starfleet patrols around Seoul.
Oh, and that is just a trope of Star Trek, is that Earth is, like, naked before the ravages of space.
True.
But this one was just especially silly. But anyway, so that's the first time that Archer does something that is really counter to the interests of the Federation, and this is a decision that haunts them again and again.
Well, Starfleet and humanity. Yeah.
And
Federation isn't around yet.
No, sorry, I meant Earth. When I say Federation, I mean
Earth is the Federation! human club.
Yep. And then you'll also notice that, like, just further emphasizing how weak Enterprise's torpedoes are, in Fortunate Son, like, Enterprise gets shot by a freighter, and, like, the freighter's weapons seem to be more powerful than Enterprise's weapons, and it's like, what?
It's called Fortunate Son?
Yeah, Fortunate Son.
Alright, you see that episode.
We're gonna talk about that again a little later, because there's another one in there. But the next incident is Fight or Flight. And that is the episode where they find an alien ship adrift, and the first thing that Archer does is hail it and give it the coordinates of Earth. And it's like, wait, I mean,
here's a map to my house.
Here is a map to Earth, which we find out later is completely undefended. and it's like, why would you do this? Why would even if these aliens are friendly, you don't know that. And mind you, the aliens that they've encountered so far are the Klingons and the Suliban. The Suliban are incredibly hostile, and the Klingons are only not hostile because Enterprise is currently doing them a favor.
True.
You know that the Klingons, later on, the Klingons, like, show that they would wipe out Earth in a second if they thought they could get away with it. And it seems like the only reason they don't is because they're worried about offending the Vulcans. Which is, you know, a fair point. The Vulcans are, you know, pretty big heavyweights.
They go toe-to-toe.
Yeah, at that point, the Vulcans are, like, you know, galactic heavyweights.
You know, we saw an episode today, what was it called, with the Klingon ship and the gas giant? Or I saw it today, anyway.
Yeah, that, the Descent, I think it's called?
Something like that, and it, I didn't realize this, but that's where the raptor design for the Klingon raptor comes from in Star Trek Online.
Yep, you can get ambushed by one of those things.
I was just like, I was watching it, I'm like, wait a minute, I know that ship! I flew one of those, and I blow them up all the time! I know that!
Yep.
Why is it in the 25th century?
Look, new ships are expensive, okay?
It's true.
Sometimes you have to fly to a junkyard and, like, you know, dig out the Star Trek equivalent of, like, you know, a 1968 Beetle.
Well, whatever gets the job done, I suppose.
Yeah.
But no, I was just like, oh, well, that's where they got that from. Because I always thought it was just a made-up design. I didn't realize it was a real thing.
And in fairness, you could, like, you know, when it comes to spaceship parts, you could always just take the hull of a Raptor and install a modern... Just
cram new stuff into it.
Install a modern warp core and modern shield generators and modern weaponry. And the only downside would be that once your shields were down, your ship would come apart like a wet paper bag. but, you know, maybe that's a risk you're willing to take if you need to raid people on a budget.
Well, you know...
But, so Fight or Flight continues, continues after Archer has made this, like, this incredibly foolish opening move, where they go aboard the ship and find that everyone is dead and hooked up to pumps that are, like, pumping the fluid out of them. And it's really gross, and we get to experience Hoshi and how afraid she is of everything,
mm-hmm.
And it's pretty spectacular.
Yep.
And, Satan's Hell is pointing out, he also left space out without a fully working translator, So, you know, bonus points. But then Archer decides, rather than leaving...
Well, that's what Hoshi was supposed to be for.
Rather than leaving, Archer decides that they are going to stick around and in a ship that doesn't have its primary weapon systems installed and wait for the ship that originally did this to come back. And it's like, okay, so now you're risking your entire crew plus Earth's best ship for a ship full of corpses. Like, you know, you like rather than doing the logical thing, which would be contacting the Vulcans and trying to find out what race this ship is, and then informing that home planet that their ship has been attacked, he's gonna hang out and wait for whoever did this to come back.
That's because he doesn't need no help from any Vulcans. And like, we're humans, we can do everything.
Yeah, Archer really, really hates Vulcans, which we'll get to again later. But like, you know, it's just the complete opposite of what any reasonable person would do in the situation. And actually, he leaves, right? And like, he agrees that it's a bad idea, he leaves, and then he comes back. And I don't remember exactly why he comes back. I think it's because he, like, has an argument with T'Pol, and, like, decides that like, she's calling him out or something. And he's like, alright, I'm gonna show you how cool I am.
Back to the ship.
Yeah, I can play with the big boys. I'm gonna go have a fight over the ship full of corpses.
With your spatial torpedoes.
Yep, with your spatial torpedoes.
With your Starfleet pop gun.
And of course, you know, lo and behold, the ship that did it comes back and, you know, kicks their butt. And it's only the timely arrival of the ship, a ship from the same species as Corpse Ship.
Sam Beckett in disguise.
Okay.
The Doctor 8 points out, well, he does jump through time.
Oh, right, because of quantum leap.
That is one of the talking points we're going to get to later.
So, you know, it's only through the intervention of another ship that Enterprise is saved, and even then only because Hoshi manages to step up to the plate and, like, convince them not to shoot at Enterprise instead, because they were going to.
We're not the ones that did this, I promise. We're not farming you for aphrodisiacs.
We're not doing it.
That's what they were originally doing, right? The other aliens that took them up the pumps.
I don't remember if they ever even explained what the pumps were for.
I think Phlox had mentioned that it was, like, some sort of...
I think this...
The chemical composition was something like an aphrodisiac or something like that.
Oh my goodness, that adds a whole other level of disturbing to this.
We'll watch the episode again.
Is that supposed to be a commentary on, like, hunting rhinos for their horns? Because that sounds like it now.
It could be. If it is, it's a really bad one.
I'm pretty sure we see that pump prop again at some point in, like, a really awkward place in the series. I can't remember exactly where, though. But after... And then after Fight of Flight, Archer moves on to new heights of incompetence in the Andorian incident.
This is my favorite
episode. The Andorian incident is so special. All right, so Archer and the Enterprise go to this Vulcan monastery for really no reason. I think Archer is, like, basically just trying to taunt T'Pol and be like, see, I could be culturally sensitive. I'm interested in your culture, even though he's clearly not. He clearly does not care about this monastery. He's just going there because he wants to
show her up.
He wants to prove that he's more culturally sensitive than she is.
Right.
So they go to this monastery and find out that there's some Andorians camping out there and, like, beating everyone up. And so the Andorians aren't pleased to see them and take them prisoner. And, you know, they have a fight, and they have an exciting escape sequence. And the Andorians' whole reason for being there is that they are claiming that the monks are spying on them.
With some, like, big, elaborate...
Yeah, which I'm not really sure how they got that idea. Because, like, there's no indication anywhere... Like apparently there's no indication from scanning the monastery that that's happening. And it seems like a sensor array of that large a magnitude would be detectable.
Like, oh man, so I just got some great news.
Great news.
Website's back up now.
Is the website back up?
Yes. So like I said, folks, if you guys want to get in on a chance to win some tickets to Las Vegas, go donate, because that is going on. We've still got that contest going on, so, you know, donate. Because, you know, I'm sure Roxy, Xander, Tosk, and Mystery Guest would love to see you guys.
Mystery Guest.
Yeah.
DJ Mystery Guest. Wait, someone else.
I'm sorry, I derailed you.
Satan Hell is once again asking us things in the... IRC.
It was a repair station that had people hooked up to it, if I remember correctly, as part of the payment for fixing the ships. That was a later episode where Mayweather was taken.
Yeah, that was a later episode. That was Dead Stop, where they had to go to a repair station and, like, it was like, give us some war plasma. Also, super secret, we're taking one of your crew to hook up to our bio computer.
Yep.
And that's another example of some stupidity by the Enterprise crew, but not actually by Archer. That's Reed and Tucker decide to go poking around in this ship in the station. That's helping them too. Basically, based on the premise that their technology is too cool, and the best thing to do in this situation is to spy on them.
Well, I mean, I'd be a little curious too as to what exactly is going on, because at that point in the series, they had met a lot of, you know, contacts, alien contacts that were, you know, more or less jerks, right?
Well, I mean,
there's another alien, like, facility, essentially, that they run up to, and it's like, oh, fix your ship! There's a price, though.
Well,
you know,
there's
gotta be a catch.
Why is there a catch? I mean, the catch is that there is a price. I mean, they demanded some more plasma. I mean, it just seems like a really silly thing to do when they have no reason to suspect these people of anything. But anyway, we're talking about the Andorian incident.
Right.
And in the Andorian incident, it eventually comes out that, in fact, the Vulcans are spying on the Andorians from this big sensor complex under the temple.
Uh-huh.
And Archer reveals it, and then... Archer reveals it, and then he sends... And then, after he does this, he invites the Andorians over to take a look at it, and then he tells T'Pol to scan it and give them her tricorder so they can have proof that there was a sense that there was a scanning thing here. And, you know, the implication is supposed to be, well, it's wrong for the Vulcans to spy on the Andorians, even though later we see that the Andorians are also spying on the Vulcans. But Archer doesn't seem mad about that.
Were the Andorians being secretive about it?
Yes.
Okay.
But anyway, it's like...
Well, Archer has a lot of predisposition against the Vulcans anyway, right?
He does, he does. But basically, like, the whole idea is that it's wrong to spy and that Archer is standing up for his principles, but it's just sort of like... These are two people. It's not like this is one of Archer's. Like, this isn't anyone involved with Earth here. This is two foreign governments. One of them is spying on the other. And Archer gets involved and acts against the Vulcans, who are Earth's ally. I would note Earth's only ally. And, like, basically just throws, like, you know, endangers that entire alliance. Especially. To help a group of people who so far have done nothing but beat him up and threaten to rape his science officer. That's all he knows about the Andorians, is that they beat him up a lot and threatened to rape T'Pol. Actually tried to rape T'Pol, even.
That's terrible.
It is terrible, and these are the people that he sides with, because he hates Vulcans just that much. And he is just that... he's so mad about spying.
So mad.
And not only... And the best part about this is that all this is going to do is inflame tensions between the Vulcans and the Andorians. And I mean, like, you know, the morality of spying on someone on a foreign nation, like, that's something that can be argued about, but it is something that real nations do all the time. And anyway, so the idea that, like, Archer is just so incensed that one space nation is spying on the other space nation just seems really strange, and like, you know, like, he doesn't understand how politics work.
Uh-huh.
So that's, you know, that's the Andorian incident. And there's actually a similar... There's a parallel to that in the episode of... in the episode of DS9, when the Klingons are about to invade Cardassia.
Right.
And the Federation... This is, like, a similar situation in that an ally of Earth or the Federation is doing something that the characters do not approve of.
Okay.
And in this instance, it's an invasion. In Enterprise, it's spying. And the DS9 crew do something similar to what Archer did, is that they intentionally let Garak know what's going on, knowing that Garak will then take the information back to the Cardassian command so the Cardassians can be ready for them when the Klingons get there.
Well, that's when he just pops in the tailor's... into the ward room and measure Sisko up.
Yeah, they invite him to measure Sisko for a new suit. and while they're talking about this invasion.
Yeah.
Now, look at the difference in scale here. The DS9 crew is acting to save lives, like billions of lives, because they know what will happen if the Klingons take over Cardassia.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, the Klingons are not nice people on a good day, and when they are occupying your planet, it's no good.
No good.
So they do this because they literally have no other option. This is, like, their only way to prevent a full-scale occupation of Cardassia, and possibly a resulting genocide.
Mm-hmm.
And they do this, and they still don't really want to do it, because they know they're betraying an ally, and that they are doing something that will come back to hurt the Federation.
Okay.
Archer, on the other hand, has no, has no hesitation. He just does it. And he's doing something, and he's stopping them from spying on each other. Like, no one is getting hurt in this monastery, except the monks that the Andorians are beating up.
Well, you know.
Yeah. And so they're like, it's just... It is such a... If you compare those two episodes and look at the contrast of what makes the DS9 crew act and what makes Archer act, just so you know, I'm putting my hands up at different levels to indicate this, which I'm sure everyone can see really nicely.
Indicating an escalation, if you will.
Yes. And so at that point, the idea, the stupidity of what Archer is doing becomes incredibly clear.
Uh-huh.
That is the Andorian incident.
Right on.
Is it time for a little bit of music, Bob?
I really want to hear some jams, I'll tell you what. As right. fascinating it is to hear you to rage about Archer.
Don't worry. Know, when we come back...
I do love listening about
it. When we get back, it'll be Fortunate Son.
It will be Fortunate Son, but I think you should get Busy Child.
Get back to talk about Archer. I just want to give a shout out to my mother, Kathy Ferguson, who's been a huge inspiration on my life, and especially in Star Trek in general. I wouldn't have been exposed to Star Trek without her help, because she is an old school Trek fan.
Well, she's cool in my book, then.
She is cool, and she was kind enough to let us know that our background music was a little bit loud. So thanks, Kathy, for that.
It makes me sad. I'll have to fiddle with that later.
Yep. All we can say is that we will make it better in the future.
We will be better in the future.
Yeah. All right.
Nothing but better in the future.
Nothing but better.
That's
only
right.
Upwards, not forwards.
That's right.
All right. So now we are going to talk about Fortunate Son.
Fortunate Son.
Those of you who have watched the show may remember this as the episode where Archer sides with some pirates.
I haven't seen Fortunate Son myself, but it sounds fascinating so far.
We're watching it after this on Netflix. It's fantastic.
All right.
Okay, so the start of the episode is this freighter called the Fortunate getting attacked by some pirates. And we find out, Enterprise is asked to respond to their distress call.
All right.
And we find out that Earth freighters, which are operating at fairly low warp and sometimes take years to reach their destination, are constantly getting attacked by Nausicaan pirates.
Those jerks.
It is a really serious problem. Like, they ask Mayweather about it, and remember, Mayweather has been in space. That's Mayweather's big thing.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, yeah, Nausicaan pirates are a huge problem for freighters. And apparently Starfleet has done absolutely nothing about it. Like, and it makes you wonder why...
Well, they've only got the one real ship.
They've got a ship. It makes you wonder why Enterprise... This wasn't Enterprise's first mission. Go deal with these pirates that are harassing our freighters. Like, you know, in real life, that's one of the big things that modern navies have to deal with, is pirates. You know, Somalia, anybody?
Yeah, it's true.
And so, like, Starfleet has done absolutely nothing about this piracy problem. And for some reason, they've decided to start now. So they show up, and they find out that after being attacked by this latest group of Nausicaans, the freighter crew has taken one of the Nausicaans hostage. And granted, the freighter crew is being a little obstinate about this whole thing, and they display a kind of bizarre dislike of Starfleet, but not because Starfleet hasn't done anything about the piracy problem.
Well, what's the motivation, then, for their behavior?
Well, the captain of the freighter, or the first officer, the captain is injured, but the first officer is in command, doesn't seem to like them because... Like, he feels that Starfleet is taking away from the freighter crews. Like, he doesn't like the fact that freighter crews are leaving to go join up with Starfleet. And he also doesn't like the fact that, like, he also is mad at, like, the fact that engines are getting faster. For some reason, he doesn't like the idea of only having to spend 6 months on a trip instead of a year. He thinks that's bad.
I'm confused as to this,
yeah,
this man's motivations.
It's confusing. It's very confusing. But he's mad at progress, and he sees Starfleet as a symbol of that.
Huh, okay.
But regardless of their personal attitudes, they are clearly the victims in the situation. They are, you know, carrying...
They're being attacked by Nausicaan
pirates. Yeah, they are being attacked by Nausicaan pirates. And so when Archer finds out that they've taken one of the Nausicaans hostage, he responds, and this is like one of the most iconic Archer lines ever. He asks them, "What gives you the right to take prisoners?" And it's like, well, I'm pretty sure it's when they started firing at us.
That happens now.
When they boarded our vessel with guns, I think that gave us the right to take one of them prisoner.
That happens now. There's been a couple instances off the Somali coast like that, mm-hmm. where, like, Somali pirates would come on a ship and the crew would, like, take them hostage.
Exactly.
You know, it's like, that's the thing that happens now. And typically when, like, our Navy or someone else's Navy gets over there, like, good job, you know, we'll take it from here.
It's good that you took these pirates hostage so they won't hijack anyone else.
Things aren't looking good for Archer now here.
Okay, so he does that, and then he demands that the Nausicaan be released. And when the freighter is like, no, we need him for our plan to stop these pirates, Archer's like, all right, well, because apparently Starfleet doesn't have jurisdiction over Earth freighters, which is a little weird, but whatever. So then they Archer just threatens to take back all the spare parts that he's given the freighter to repair itself if they don't turn over the Nausicaan. He just blackmails them. He's like, "Give me." He's so mad at these freighter people for taking this guy hostage.
What season is this?
This is season one. yep.
Really, this isn't after Ahab Archer.
Nope. This is season one. So when they refuse, and we have this great moment where the Fortunate shoots Enterprise and knocks out their sensors, and it's like, oh boy, Enterprise just got its clock cleaned by a freighter. It's like, oh wow, this makes me hopeful of Starfleet.
The old freighter that's not up to date, mind you, not as fast as Enterprise. No shielding either.
No, it doesn't have shields. It doesn't have nothing. It just has some upgraded plasma guns on the front, which is sort of like the equivalent of if you can imagine a fishing trawler. Strolling up to an American destroyer and, shooting it and then running away. And the destroyer just being like, oh, God, we were just shot by a fishing vessel. Oh, my dear.
The engines are offline. Oh,
everything is awful.
This episode's shaping up real good so far. I like this.
Yeah. and so then we find out, and then, Archer gives chase and, he has this weird conversation with Meriwether where, Meriwether's like, hey, Captain, maybe we're not handling this the right way. Maybe we're treating the freighter like the bad guy when we shouldn't be. and Archer's like, no, Meriwether, you're dumb. And he's like, it's because I can't... He actually says, if the Fortunate were to destroy a Nausicaan ship, that wouldn't sit right with me. And it's like, okay, you don't seem to understand the idea of the Nausicaans are attacking them. It's not like this is something that the freighter is doing unprovoked.
Who wrote this episode?
I don't know who wrote this episode. It was Fortunate Son. No, it was Berman and Braga. They wrote almost everything in the first season. Just shows their amazing writing talents on display. And so then finally, once Archer finally confronts the freighter again, because the freighter had this great the freighter first officer had this great plan of beating the access codes out of his prisoner, and either his prisoner gave him the wrong codes
The Nausicaan prisoner
either the Nausicaan prisoner gave him the wrong codes, or the Nausicaans change their codes when someone gets taken prisoner.
Codes to do what? Are we talking Star Trek
shield
2
access
type stuff?
Codes.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, or frequencies, that is. Shield frequencies. This is one of those episodes where if you know
the
shield frequency...
Lursa and
you can,
Bator on them?
Yeah. This is one of those episodes where if you know the shield frequency, you can shoot through the shields.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't work, so the Fortunate is getting, swarmed by Nausicaan ships, and Archer rolls up and, does at least demand that the Nausicaans leave.
Uh-huh.
But then he, kind of flies off and doesn't do anything else about it, and, is sort of and it just sort of leaves on the note that he makes a vague threat about how you're totally going to see more NX-class ships here eventually. And it's like, well, all right, in season four, we will finally get one other NX-class ship.
3 years later.
But it's like, he doesn't take any steps to solve the problem. He doesn't talk to Admiral Forrest about maybe sending some more ships here. He doesn't talk to the freighters about giving them better protection.
Not the Vulcans either.
He doesn't blow the pirate base away. Because there's a pirate base, 3 meters away, spitting distance. that where the pirates bring their stuff. He doesn't do anything. And he is so mad at these freighters for fighting back.
This can't be a real episode.
No, this is a real episode. We're gonna watch it.
You are pulling my leg, sir.
No, it's real. You can watch it on Netflix. And so I like to compare I think it's really obvious how this decision that he's making is bad for Earth. Because he is deliberately allowing piracy of Earth trade to continue when he could, if not stop it, at least reduce it substantially by either destroying or disabling and then imprisoning these three Nausicaan ships.
Was Enterprise armed by this time? Did it have the phase cannons installed?
It did not, but this was actually one of the few episodes where they met a ship that was weaker than them.
Oh, man.
And they actually established...
It wasn't the freighter.
they actually established that... I think the idea is that the freighter supposedly got off, a lucky shot or something.
Okay.
It shot them when their hull plating wasn't polarized. Which we'll talk about more later. but, when they actually roll up to the Nausicaan ships, they actually at least say that they can beat, that they can take them. Maybe that was a bluff. I don't know. Would be fascinating if it was a bluff. but the implication is that Enterprise could actually take these three Nausicaan pirate ships.
Mm-hmm.
And so, clearly Archer is acting against the interests of Earth here, you know, in addition to just the interests of common decency. I mean, as much as we like to romanticize pirates, like, actual piracy is really horrible.
Yeah, it is.
Especially since these are just, like, you know, these are, like, mom-and-pop-owned, like, you know, family freighters. We're not talking, like, giant corporate oil tankers here that are, like, exploiting the local economy to their advantage. This is, these are, like, you know, this is as black and white as a situation could possibly get.
And Archer gets on the wrong side.
And Archer gets on the wrong side.
So you're saying that Archer would side with Somali pirates?
Maybe. But like, the Somali pirates actually have a reason for what they're doing, unlike, you know, unlike the Nausicaans, who are just doing it because they're greedy.
Well, you know. Well, Nausicaan societies are always kind of been a mercenary type one anyway.
Yeah.
At least that's how they're portrayed.
We don't really know anything about Nausicaans other than that they're thugs that people sometimes hire to do things.
The Klingon Empire probably conquered them.
Probably.
in Star Trek Online.
Did they?
Yep.
All right.
And they had, it was after the Gorn were taken out.
Mm-hmm.
Gosh, I am rusty on my Star Trek Online lore. If anyone in the Pigeon channel, in the RR channel, Riser Radio channel, can help me out with this, I think they had sided with the Orions at one point, which had come into the conflict with the Gorn, I think, or the Klingons had declared war against the Orions, and then the Nausicaans were hired by the Orions,
I think
is how it works.
I wasn't even clear if Nausicaans are even supposed to have their own government, like, or if they might just be, like, roving bands. Also, the Nausicaans in Enterprise look really lame. Like, the Nausicaans in the Federation, in Next Generation, in DS9, are really intimidating looking, and are, like,
Like,
monsters. The ones in Enterprise are just kind of bad special effects.
Okay.
don't worry, you're gonna see this episode when we're done.
Michael Westmore was not behind this?
No.
Ooh.
And then, so let's compare this to, because this episode did have, like, a gem of a good idea, like, at the very core, which was the idea of Starfleet having to rein in human or Federation citizens who are that mistreating aliens. And the most direct parallel to this is the Maquis in DS9.
I don't know if Maquis were mistreating.
Well, they were performing hostile acts.
True.
against an alien race. And in both instances, the humans clearly have reasons for what they're doing. The Maquis are acting in what they believe to be self-defense against aggression by the Cardassian colonists. But in the DS9 episode, you will note that before Sisko acts against the Maquis, he takes very definite steps to stop the weapon shipments that the Central Command is sending into their colonists in the DMZ. So he acts to defuse the situation, and then only as a last resort, he moves to stop the Maquis with military force so as to preserve the peace treaty. And even then, DS9 leaves it open as to whether or not that was a good idea. Like, you are, you know, DS9, like, the characters debate about that, about whether the decision to stop the Maquis was the right one, or if they should have just let them do what they were going to do. Whereas in Enterprise, we are basically told to accept that Archer's decision was the right one, even though it's completely nonsensical.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, Archer, you know, there we have Archer proudly, like, you know, damaging Earth trade, and you know, just ensuring fewer recruits for Starfleet, because this is what all the freighters are going to remember that Starfleet did. Like, you know, the opposite of helping.
I'm having a real hard time imagining this Archer you're talking about.
It's real. and if you thought that was hard to imagine,
not that I'm an Archer fan to begin with, because, you know, I've got my own, you know, kind of qualms with them, but
mm-hmm.
It's just, like, I can't believe this is a thing that happened, and decided with pirates.
It is real, okay? It's, it is real!
I will be dealing with it later,
I suppose. You will be. Before we move on to the next episode, again, reiterate, we love DJ Archer on this show. He is awesome, okay? We like him. We like him. Please don't be mad at us.
Well, he'll fire you later.
He will fire me. All right. So, next, we're going to...
If he hasn't already.
He might have. The paperwork may, in fact, be en route. but right now, we're going to move on to Dear Doctor.
Dear Doctor.
Which certain more jaded fans of Star Trek will remember as the episode where Phlox and Archer commit genocide.
Now, this is what your brother had endearingly called Space Canadians.
Oh, yeah. Because we, because we're kind of racist against Canadians, and we portray all of them as being very efficient, very friendly, and very well-organized people. Because the only Canadian we know is like that, so we just assume all Canadians are like that.
Uh-huh.
But anyway, so the Dear Doctor is an episode where they go to a planet that is being ravaged by this horrible plague that is just ruining them.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, you know, millions of them are dying each year from the plague. And the implication is that they're the implication is that their population isn't that large to begin with. And they will be completely extinct within, like, the next 2 centuries.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a really, really big deal. Like, this plague is wiping them out, and they ask for help. And at first, it's like, you know, it's like a little cultural drama, because, like, you know, the crew gets to interact with them and see what's up. And at first, there's, like, this little drama between Archer and the aliens, where they ask him for warp technology, so that they can go and find help at other races. And
right, Archer, he said he'd think about it, is what it was. This is before Archer, Prime Directive or anything like that.
Yeah, and this was actually kind of a cool moment, where Archer, like, realized that he couldn't give these people warp technology because they weren't ready for it. I mean, is debatable.
This sounds like an interesting parallel to something.
Yeah. But, like, you know, that's the reason that Archer hates Vulcans, is that the Vulcans wouldn't give him warp technology. And so he realizes he can't do that. And it's like, oh, potential for character growth. But instead, that gets shunted off to the side, because Phlox actually figures out a cure for this disease. And then he says that it would not be ethical to give them the cure. And I will explain why.
Please do.
There is a race, the Volokians are the primary race, but there is another sentient race living on this planet called the Menk. And they're like, they're two races that, you know, evolved parallel to each other, in much the same way it would be as if Homo sapiens and Neanderthals were both still walking around.
Mm-hmm.
And they say that the Menk are less evolved, which I put as many air quotes around as possible, because you can't be less evolved than someone else, but the Menk are less intelligent. They don't have the same higher reasoning capabilities that the Volokians do.
They're nice people still.
Yeah, they are. And they're basically, you know, they're a labor class, but from what we see of them, they are incredibly well treated. Like, the Volokians give them everything.
Absolutely.
And, you know, in exchange for doing, like, you know, the manual labor. And it's like, you know, if it's almost like a, they have almost like a paradise relationship. If you think of the way humans treat their labor, if we treat our labor classes, you know, who are the same species as us. And it's well worth noting that even in this situation where all the Volokians are dying out, none of them have started, like, committing acts of violence against the Menk, and their society isn't falling apart. And when Enterprise shows up, like, and there's, like, a rumor spreads that Enterprise might have the cure, the Volokian ships show up, and they're like, do you have a cure? And Enterprise is like, no, we don't. And they're like, oh, sorry. And then they leave. Because they are exceptionally reasonable people.
Well, the show is centering around the Doctor and his moral dilemma, more or less. Not really, like a species.
Basically, the Doctor asserts that he can predict the Menk's evolutionary path, and that the Menk are on the brink of evolving to be smarter. And that they can't do that if the Volokians are still around. And so he posits that it would be wrong to save the Volokians, because that is denying the Menk their chance to evolve. Which makes it sound like a Pokemon lineup. And so, like, let's...
Menk, I choose you.
Let's ignore
the Use fact, higher reasoning
Let's
attack.
Ignore the fact... Let's assume for a minute that everything Phlox says is true.
Okay.
Which it isn't. Even a basic understanding of biology will tell you that nothing he's saying makes sense, and some of it's even contradictory. Let's assume for a minute that's all true, that if the Volokians die out, like, you know, that the Volokians dying out will give the Menk the possibility of evolving. You know, and again, that's not how evolution works, but we'll ignore that. Even Phlox admits this is something that might happen.
Okay.
And Archer decides, and at first Archer is against this, and at first when I was watching this, I was like, oh man, is Archer finally going to do something I like? At first Archer is appalled by this idea, but then he actually comes around to it. And he decides not to give the Volokians the cure to their disease.
Mm-hmm. I want to give a quick shout out to Spike122. Hello, Spike122!
Yes.
Welcome to Riser Radio.
In the IRC, Mr. Spike, we're glad you're here. But he decides not to give the Volokians the cure, based on the reasoning that in, like, the next 3 centuries, the Menk might evolve to become smarter. Even though, like, this isn't going to help any of the Menk that are alive now, and since none of them can take care of themselves because they're all, like, you know, because they're all used to being taken care of by the Volokians, I would posit that most of them will also die out.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, let's, again, we'll ignore all of that. This decision that Archer makes is directly against the interests of Earth, because he is costing them an ally that would have basically been devoted to them for the rest of time for saving their species from a plague. And, like, again, we saw how well organized the Volokians are. They would make really good allies. And even though they're not at warp level yet, you know, they could be slowly, you know, like, you know, they could be slowly introduced to it.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, even if all the Federation needed from them was a trade agreement for raw materials. This would still be
an rocks and the replicator.
Yeah, rocks for the replicator. This would still be an incredibly valuable alliance that they could forge here.
Mm.
And he throws it out the window. And then, to make matters worse, they don't even take steps to make sure that no one knows they have the cure. Like, Phlox, throughout the entire episode, is writing a letter to his doctor friend, telling him that he has the cure and then doesn't give it to the Volokians. So, if the Volokians manage to find a cure on their own, which they very well might, considering it took Phlox, like, 2 days,
mm-hmm.
And then they find out that Enterprise had a cure and didn't give it to them, and, like, you know, caused, like, whoever knows how many millions more people to die... Now, instead of an ally, Earth has a blood enemy that will probably never forgive them. And it's like, you know, Earth has enough enemies already.
Yeah,
And it's just like, you know, it is such a poor decision. And like from every angle you look at it, it's a poor decision. And it's just, it is hard to watch. Like, it is hard to accept that this is happening on television. That someone thought this was a good idea. Like, the writers, like, Berman and Braga sat down and wrote this episode. I think it was Berman and Braga. Maybe it wasn't. I seem to recall that maybe Dear Doctor wasn't written by them.
We'll find out later.
Yeah, but whoever wrote this episode sat down and was like, this is a good idea. I'm going to do this. And it was just like, you know, it was so mind-bogglingly awful.
Well, this also alludes to the Prime Directive.
Yes, they also... They give an
a doctrine, this directive, if you will.
Yes, Archer says, if only they had some kind of directive to tell me what to do here. And this is sort of a parallel to certain Next Generation and Voyager episodes, where they were like, the Prime Directive stops us from intervening and helping these people. And, you know, granted, some of those episodes are really weird, too.
Mm-hmm.
But in all the Next Generation episodes, you will notice that even though the Prime Directive says not to help, they always do. Because the point of the Prime Directive there wasn't an excuse for the Enterprise not to help people. It was supposed to be a way to test their humanity and to show that even against the rules, they would help people. And it's still a stupid rule, but whatever. At least they broke it. And of course, in Voyager, Janeway used it as her wonderful excuse to let an entire group of an entire planet like wipe itself out in a giant explosion because Prime Directive.
Because Prime Directive.
But again, even in that episode, they eventually ended up not letting them die out because they found out that Voyager actually caused the explosion. I'm reasonably certain this is the first time in Star Trek that they have actually taken the Prime Directive this far. in before the Prime Directive even exists, which is the amazing part. And so,
well, you know, things like that happen in the Star Trek universe.
Yeah. And so then after Dear Doctor, we move on from the horrific to the just silly.
Mm-hmm.
But do we have time for this, Bob, or do we have to put on some? Do we have to put on some music?
A little bit of music, I think, for the audience would be a good thing. You know,
we need a bit of break after all this genocide talk.
It's true. I mean, you look pretty winded right now. I think you need a glass of water.
I do. All right. So enjoy the music. When we come back, A Night in Sick Bay.
That's right. And you're back, we're back, everyone is back with All Things Trek here on RiseRadio.com.
Indeed.
So, during the break,
yes,
we had an individual in the chat room, Spike122.
Who was cool, we like it when people engage us and stuff. But
it's
true,
we do like talking to people.
He made he actually made a comment that he likes the episode Fortunate Son and believes it was a good episode. And we asked him to provide some specifics, and he kindly did, thank you for that. And the specifics that he provides are threefold. First, that it delves into like Meriwether's background, which it does. I don't have a problem.
Which is
with
all
that.
Right, that's
and that's
cool.
Fair. Meriwether definitely needed the development.
Is it Meriwether or Mayweather?
Oh, right, it is Mayweather. You're Mayweather. Right, Mayweather. I think of him as Travis.
Travis,
because they're always talking. They're always like referring to people by their first names in Enterprise.
It's true.
But anyway, so, and that's true. It does do that. And that's not my problem with the episode. My problem with the episode is the way it portrays Archer and his decisions. not so much what it does with Mayweather's character. Although that part at the end where he's giving his little speech and then he stands up out of the helmsman's chair, and there's suddenly no one driving the ship. And it's like, oh, what? Sit back down. Sit down.
Fly this tub.
Stay in that chair. I will acknowledge that. And then he says, and it shows that not all humans are without error. And it certainly does. It shows that Archer is capable of making really awful mistakes.
It's true! it's absolutely true!
So that's also true. But that is part of the reason why I don't like it, is because I would think that they would... I'm definitely not fond of that episode.
I'm not really fond of the episode either so far. I haven't seen it.
The final thing is that it has Noskan pirates. And it does have Noskan pirates. And that's cool.
I do dig me some Noskans.
But as I also pointed out, I don't like the way the Noskans look in New Enterprise. Like, I just think they're not nearly as cool looking, and they sound very reasonable and calm, as opposed to the Noskans that I remember, which were like, you know, because back in my day, things were different.
I'll reserve judgment on that, because I haven't seen them yet.
Yeah. I just don't like them as much.
Right.
But anyway, I'm going to move on from that. Mm-hmm. Bob, you had something you needed to say?
Yes, I do, about Las Vegas. There's these tickets available, you see, to Las Vegas.
Uh-huh.
Yep, and I want to send you to Las Vegas. Most importantly, Rise of Radio wants to send you to Las Vegas. But Bob, how do I get these tickets to Las Vegas? It's really simple. I'm not going to cut you off right there, because, you know.
Okay, go for it.
That's right. It's really simple. All you got to do, go to RiseRadio.com and donate. And it can be just like a dollar. It doesn't even have to be that much. A dollar will get you into the drawing for this. Donate a dollar. Or more. You know, we'd love you to donate more, obviously, because that keeps us running, gets more equipment, things like that, keeps our site running longer, so we can deliver more awesome content like this to you guys. Because I like doing that. You like doing it, right, Ori?
I do, indeed.
Yeah! So, you know, keep the site running longer. Anyway, we want to send you to Las Vegas. Dollar donation, at minimum, gets you guys into the drawing for Las Vegas. And what are you going to do in Las Vegas? You're going to go to the convention in Las Vegas, and you're also going to have dinner with three of our DJs. And our DJs are, who are they, Ori?
Archer... Toss and Roxy, I think. Yeah,
Xander Toss and Roxy.
I just want to have dinner with Archer. Okay?
You are so fired.
I just want to have dinner with Archer. What
you
can
are
I say?
So fired. and then there's mystery guest.
Yes, a mystery guest who's my favorite.
I'm not even sure who mystery guest is yet. I'm not on the inside track on that yet. I'm sure they might know. You might want to press, you know, Xander, Roxy, or Toss for information, but you know. I'm not the guy to ask, you know. I don't know. I'm just on the inside loop on that.
So anyway, donate. Go to Las Vegas. It's a rad thing.
It is a rad thing. Okay. You can also get involved with the show, just like Spike 1 in 22 is. You can join us in the Riser Radio channel on Star Trek Online. It's RR, both capital. You can also join us on the IRC chat client on the website, which is up now.
Yeah, now that the website is working.
Yeah, now that the website's working, which is fantastic. It's just... Yeah, we're set up. It's true. We have our hiccups. We're human and we're with error, just like everyone, like Archer.
Like Archer. Okay.
Not maybe not the extremes.
Do we compare ourselves to Archer? Okay. Now I need to take a shower.
Okay. All right. I'm sorry, Oren.
Okay, so we have one last episode on the docket, and that is A Night in Sick Bay. And you know, we were just talking about Dear Doctor, which was this really heavy like moral episode, and now we have that in Sick Bay, which is just pure absurdity and is like. Considered by a lot of people to be the worst episode of Star Trek, like rivaling Threshold for how bad it is.
I've seen Threshold. That was pretty bad.
Threshold is really awful. But basically, the plot is that there's a part that they need from this alien race, and the alien race are like really, really, really tight on protocol, and like Earth, the humans are always doing something to offend them.
As we usually are around the universe at this time.
But basically, they need this part. Like, if they leave without this part, they are risking blowing themselves up.
Okay.
But Archer, and like, at the beginning of the episode, they've done something to offend the aliens. And we later find out it's because Archer brought his dog with him down to talk to them, and his dog peed on some sacred trees. Which, to be fair, is something that you could get thrown out of, you know, a diplomatic meeting for today for doing that. I mean, you know, I imagine if, like, you know, if like, the American ambassador to...
Oh, no, the prized Romanian azalea bushes!
Or, you know, yeah, or, I mean, like, if the...
I'm sorry, that wasn't PC. I apologize.
I imagine that it would cause quite a stir if, like, you know, if like, an American ambassador, like, brought his dog to Russia and peed on, you know, Lenin's tomb. I imagine that would be a big kerfuffle. But anyway, like, Archer needs to apologize. And Archer does not want to apologize. He is so upset that he has to apologize to these people. Because, you know, now his dog is sick because it caught a pathogen while it was down on the planet. And he's just so obsessed with
it. Well, he brought the dog to the planet.
Yeah, he brought the dog. I mean, and his logic is like, well, I told them I was bringing a dog. They should have known of all possible pathogens that could infect this dog.
Everything.
And it's like, well, that's kind of unrealistic.
I mean, no kidding.
I don't think we know all possible pathogens that can infect a dog. Especially because dogs are, like, you know, much more likely to get infected than humans because they're crawling around on the ground and sniffing everything and sticking their everything into everything else.
But their mouths are really clean.
That's true. Dogs have much cleaner mouths than we do.
Yep. It still won't let it lick me after it drinks out of the toilet, though.
No!
Yeah, not so much.
So, but basically, he spends the entire episode, like grappling with the fact that he does not want to apologize to these people because he's just that upset over this whole issue. And it's like, you know, he actually considers leaving without the part. Like, deliberately taking the ship...
The necessary part that they need to keep the ship from blowing up.
Yeah. Like, well, because, like, you know, they can chance it. Like, they can try. It's like, you know, it's like going without a spare tire, except if you pop your tire, your car explodes. It's like that. That's approximately the risk he's willing to take.
All right.
And, like, you know, and all the aliens want is for him to do this, like, little apology ceremony. And he does not want to do it. And he
just
is
not
so
into
mad.
That.
He snaps at, like, everybody. He's so mad because he loves his dog so much.
So much.
And they even drop the line that he's supposed to be a trained diplomat. And I'm like, really? Was there, like, a plague among diplomats in the future? Do we have no other diplomats? Like, did they not send... could they not afford a diplomat to go on Earth's only space exploration ship to do this kind of stuff? Like, it had to be Archer, I guess. And so, again, he's, like... You know, he's risking the Earth's best and perhaps only ship, you know, because he doesn't want to apologize to some people who made his dog sick. And he also was, like, snapping at T'Pol and Hoshi, I think. And then the rest of the episode is just really boring.
He is really attached to that dog, though.
He is really attached to that dog. I mean, hell, excuse me, even Janeway knew not to bring her dog into space with her.
Oh, yeah, she left it with, like...
Yeah, she left it with her husband.
Yeah.
Her fiancé. Because, yeah, you know, like she liked her dog, but she knew her dog didn't belong in space.
Not in space.
But apparently Archer doesn't have that qualm. Because, you know, it's a small dog, right? So it'll be fine.
He's trying to rival that, what was the name of the dog the Soviets sent up?
I don't remember. I
want to say Svetlana, but I don't think that's right.
I don't remember the name of that dog. I just remember that as... I remember that as a trailblazing dog who never came back. And every time I think about that dog, it makes me sad. I feel like that dog deserved better.
Probably.
But, so that's the end of, like... You'll notice that most of these episodes are Season 1, Night in Sickbay is Season 2. So Archer does get a little better. And he does get kind of obsessed, in the whole, when he takes the Enterprise into the Expanse to try to find the Sphere Builders, the people who sent the giant laser I was talking about earlier.
Yes.
But I'm willing to accept that just because it's like, you know, even though it may seem a little foolish, it's like at the moment they know nothing about the people that they're dealing with. Mm-hmm. So, like, you know, it's valuable information that they're sending Archer after, even if it is questionable in terms of how much of a risk it is to the ship. I'm willing to accept that. So I will concede that he becomes less incompetent as the show moves forward.
He gains experience and levels up, if you will.
Yeah, but, you know, you would think that they would have provided the Enterprise with a competent captain to begin with. Like, you know, like, there's this one line where the Vulcan ambassador says, we think Captain, I think it was Captain Foster?
Captain Gardner.
Captain Gardner, right. Captain Gardner would have been a much better choice. And I like to imagine Captain Gardner as being, like, this really great guy who would have been a fine choice for the commander of Enterprise. But, like, the Vulcans registered that they liked him, which, because Earth hates the Vulcans so much, was, like, this huge black mark on his record. And he's just like...
Vulcans like you, you don't get to command a
starship.
And he's
like, what? But I did everything right. I have the best scores, and I'm the best diplomat, and I, like, ace all the tactical simulations.
I'm
like,
better
no.
than that stupid old Archer over there.
No, the Vulcans like you. You're being reassigned to toilet duty forever. Just so you don't... You know, we don't want to get your Vulcan-loving germs on us.
Oh, that's terrible.
But I like to think of that. So those are, like, just...
The more and more I hear about Enterprise, the more and more I think it's just actually humanity is bumbling about.
That's basically what it is. I sometimes think that Enterprise was a troll, like on Star Trek fans by Berman and Braga. They were just, like, seeing how much they could get away with.
Ooh.
It was like, come on, guys, how much will you watch before you finally stop? but this... And that... So that's Archer's, like, as a command officer. As it comes to Archer as a character... first of all, I want to make it clear that I usually don't hold the actors responsible for Star Trek characters that I don't like. For example, I don't like Janeway, but I like Kate Mulgrew. Kate Mulgrew is a fine actress.
Yep.
I don't like Neelix, but Ethan Phillips is fine.
He does a good job.
He does a job with what he's given.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't like most of the first generation, for the first season characters in Next Generation. But again, that's clearly not the actor's fault. That's they're being given bad lines and bad direction.
Oh, such good lines, you mean?
Oh, such good lines. gotta love Tasha Yar and her amazingly emotional overacting. Captain McCartan is I hate children. This is my entire defining
I hate children
trait. However, in this era, in this instance, I make an exception because I think some of Archer's problems rest on Scott Bakula.
Ooh, do tell.
Well, it's just because a lot of the reason I don't like Archer as a character, the single thing I dislike most about him is how entitled he sounds. Like, when he doesn't get his way, he acts like a spoiled child. And I feel like that's partially Bakula. And I don't know that for a fact, but it's hard for me to imagine a director saying to someone, now act like a spoiled child. Do it. And I haven't seen Bakula in a lot of other stuff.
Give me an example of him acting like a spoiled child.
Well, there's the one, Infortunate Son, where he's, like, so mad at the freighter crew for doing something he doesn't approve of. And then there's, like, Shadows of Pajem, where the Vulcans decide to take away his science officer in response to him getting their outpost and surveillance, getting their monastery and surveillance equipment destroyed. Mm. And he is so pouty that they would do this. And, like, he's just so appalled that there were consequences to his actions. And he's just, like, you know, the way that he acts, like, his tone of voice is so grating.
Does that add to the prospect that he might just be Sam Beckett in disguise?
This is a distinct possibility. and, like, they also, they keep trying to make Archer, like, an action hero. Like, they're always putting him in fistfights that he can't win. He's always losing fistfights. And, you know, Picard wasn't very good at fistfighting either, but Picard was clearly a thinking man's captain. And, you know, he was a philosopher and a strategist and a diplomat, and Archer is none of those things. And with Archer, I felt like they were trying to replicate the Captain Kirk vibe with Archer. But, you know, you just can't do it. Like you know, Captain Kirk was Captain Kirk, and Captain Kirk would rip his shirt, and then you know, and then you were, and then
they get,
you know,
get things done.
Then things were serious.
But it
Archer,
got real.
Archer just can't do that. He's very awkward. Like he's if you just watch him fight, he is very physically awkward. There's like my favorite example of this is actually in season 4, where there's this story arc involving the Vulcans, which is actually very good. Because season 4 Enterprise was fairly good actually, because they gave it to a completely different writer.
That was after Archer, Ahab Archer.
Yeah, that was after he went into the Expanse.
Yeah.
And there's like, they keep cutting away from this really interesting series of scenes between Shran and the Vulcan ambassador, who are like, you know, who are like arguing and yelling at each other, and like the Vulcan ambassador is trying to convince Shran to help them, and it's this really poignant series of scenes, and then they cut to Archer dragging some stones through the desert, and like, he fights a Vulcan at one point, he fist fights a Vulcan, and he actually wins this fist fight. But Scott Bakula is just so physically awkward. It's hard to believe that he won this fistfight, especially since we know that Vulcans are supposed to be stronger and faster than humans.
And on home turf now.
Yeah, and it's like, it's just, like, there are just these, he's just, like, it's just, it's bad choreography. He's just, like, leaving, he's like, he moves so slowly when he's fighting this Vulcan that, like, you know, I'm not really a fighter myself. I don't do martial arts. I do fencing, but that, you know, like, kind of counts. And, like, but even
you
I
don't carry a sword with you everywhere you go, though.
Or do I?
Re-examining, walk down the street with you.
Yeah. But it's just, you know, it's just, he's clearly not an action hero, and they keep trying to make him one. And then, you know, just a little personal pet peeve of mine, I don't like his speeches. He always gives speeches. He loves giving speeches. And they just, to me, they feel like kind of bumbling. And he's always giving a different speech every time they meet a new group of aliens, and you would think that they would have, like, a standardized greeting. But they apparently don't.
Nah.
Nope.
It's like the prime directive that doesn't exist.
Yep.
And they don't know how to talk to people yet. Yeah.
And the final thing that I hate about Archer is that he is so racist against Vulcans. He hates Vulcans so much. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with
that. Well, because he was claiming that, like, it was a personal thing, I think, with Archer, more or less, because he kept claiming that, you know, which we're going to get to this in a second. This is, I think, the crown jewel of the entire thing, that they were holding back humans from more protective technology, specifically his dad, because mm-hmm. his dad was working with, like, I don't know if he's actually working with him, like, at the Cochrane Warp 5 complex.
His dad was
or
a warp engineer.
Yeah.
And, like, Archer blames the Vulcans for the fact that his dad died before ever getting to see a Warp 5 engine made by humans, and he's so mad that the Vulcans wouldn't give them technology. That's all. That is the only reason he hates Vulcans, is because the Vulcans would not give him the technology he wanted fast enough. It's, you know, like, if you look at, there have been prejudices.
It's not like the Vulcans were actively burning their data research.
I mean, look at another prejudiced character. Look at Miles O'Brien from Deep Space Nine. Miles O'Brien does not like Cardassians.
No, he doesn't.
He tries to hide it, but he's clearly prejudiced against Cardassians. Why is he prejudiced against Cardassians? Because he fought a war with them. And he remembers the Cardassians almost wiping out a civilian colony that he and, like, you know, a couple hundred other Federation troops were trying to protect.
Mm-hmm.
And he remembers that happening. And he also, you know, also later the Cardassians, like, took him prisoner and interrogated him, you know, to try to get secrets about, you know, to try to embarrass the Federation, and nearly executed him. So he has, you know, real reasons for disliking the Cardassians, and his hatred doesn't go nearly as far as Archer's does. Archer is just, like, Archer can barely restrain his contempt when he's talking to, you know, to Romulan. to Vulcans.
The Vulcans. Kind of like Cardassians and Vulcans,
yeah,
but
kind
not.
Of similar. So, anyway, that's, you know, that's just another contrast you can draw between good Star Trek and bad Star Trek, is that good Star Trek has flawed characters who have reasons for their flaws and have good backstories. Bad Star Trek has stupid characters with no reasons for their flaws.
or the actions they take, actually, behind that. The pirate one still has me.
The pirate one.
I can't get that out of my head.
You'll get to see it soon. All right. So that's all I have on Archer. I only had about an hour and a half to talk about Archer. So
it's true. Well, it's okay. We got more stuff coming up. It's like, by no means is the show done.
Nope. We're going to...
Not at all.
We're going to play some music, and then we're going to talk about the ship designs.
We are going to talk about ship design. I do love me the Excelsior, though, even though it's an Enterprise.
We're not going to talk about the Excelsior, though. It's not in a series.
We're back. Final segment.
We are so ready for this.
So, you feel good now you got that Archer anxiety
system?
I do.
I feel cathartic. I feel like I've purged negative emotions.
Good word use. You get a gold star for that.
So we're going to move on and not talk about Enterprise anymore this episode. We're going to talk about some starship design.
Yeah, starship design.
Each series had a rad starship in its own way, and some not so rad in their own ways. Ironically, my favorite is actually the original Enterprise. You know, the original series...
You're on TOS, right?
Yeah, TOS, the original series Enterprise, was my favorite.
Okay.
Because it was functional, it was small. Like, Kirk's quarters even aren't that big. The bridge is not that big. And it's like, you know, spaceships should be cramped. Even advanced spaceships should be cramped. And I really liked... I mean, like, because space is at a premium in space.
Space is a premium space. You get it. It's funny.
It's funny. Yes, it's comedy gold. basically, I like the original Enterprise because, in addition to actually to looking right, even though the colors were a little weird, it was also the best Starfleet ship in terms of crew, because they actually showed us occasionally that when the bridge gave an order to fire the phasers. It was they were actually giving an order to a phaser crew that operated the phasers, whereas
it wasn't as automated as we see in later.
Yeah, whereas in other series, it seems like the entire ship is run from the bridge, and that you could actually just remove the rest of the crew and everything would be fine.
So you enjoy, you like that older Enterprise because everything has to be done more or less by hand.
Yeah, and it showed...
It's more mechanical,
I guess you could say. It was really like, this is why we have all these people on board, is because we need them to do these jobs.
But no kids.
Yeah, no kids. and so the original Enterprise, I feel, was actually the best designed ship of any Star Trek series.
Mm-hmm.
Which is ironic, because it was made back in the 60s. But I feel it did a really good job, and I do really like the way that they refitted it to look in the movies. I think it looks so cool in the movies.
I like the refit Enterprise look better than the older look.
Yeah, I mean, the older one does look kind of goofy. But I really liked how in Star Trek 3, they actually did that. They start, Scotty set up an automation system so they could run the ship with just, you know, the bridge crew, and then they got shot once by a Klingon bird of prey, and it broke. And
a trained chimpanzee and two trainees could run there.
Yeah.
Well, that was a terrible accent.
It was, but...
I'll flog myself later for that.
But I do feel like... But it was, you know, it was really cool, because it was like, it showed why they actually needed a crew, because when they went toe-to-toe with that Klingon bird of prey... That should
the automation center was overloaded,
which, you know, which they should have been able to just, you know, completely clean its clock because it was like, you know, a tenth their size. The automation center failed, and suddenly they couldn't control the ship because they had no crew. And I really liked that about Star Trek III, even though I'm not crazy about Star Trek III as a film. I really liked that moment. I thought that was cool.
I like the Excelsior.
We're not talking about the Excelsior. The Excelsior is not one of the main ships, okay?
The Excelsior is so cool.
The Excelsior is cool, okay? But it had a really lame captain. Yeah, his captain was so confused that anything was going on. He's like, I'm gonna come onto the bridge, expect everything to
with
work
a riding crop, no less.
Yeah, what was that?
I like to imagine it's like a phaser riding crop is what it is. Well, if you look at how it's designed, it's not... Because when you look at, like, military generals or whatnot, mm-hmm. like Patton, for instance, he's got a riding crop or something with him, right?
Yeah.
You know, there was that same kind of, like, silhouette look that you saw with that captain, whatever his name was, yeah. in Star Trek 3.
Yeah, he'll ride a space horse.
Yeah, but it's like, what's at the end of it? Is it, like, a cattle prod?
No, the end of it is, like, instead of, like, using it to make the horse go faster, where the ship's not going fast enough, he whips the helmsman with it. It's like, faster! Faster!
Obviously your fault, helmsman.
Yep.
Oh, man.
But, so... You know, original Enterprise gets an A+ in terms of interior, at least, ship design.
Because it's so cramped and looks...
Yeah, because
it looks real
it
in your opinion?
It feels like a spaceship. You know, it's cramped, it has actual crew members on board. It also established some cool things like the transporter, which was a really cheap way to get them from point A to point B so they didn't have to waste money on a shuttlecraft, which they eventually...
Which they got later anyway.
Which they eventually did anyway for some reason. So then, and then we got to the Enterprise D in Next Generation, which I really liked the look of the Enterprise D, like from the outside. I thought,
yeah, I didn't
cool.
at first. I thought it was the ugliest thing I'd ever seen.
I liked it. I thought it looked neat. But the Enterprise D as a spaceship makes no sense. First of all, everything in the Enterprise D is opulent and luxurious, and it's like a 5-star hotel. And again, it's like this is a spaceship. Why aren't we using this room for, you know, systems? Why aren't there more shield generators in this half of my quarters?
well, it was designed to be like a deep space exploration ship, right?
All the reason why you need to pack everything into that ship. Why everything is important.
But we have replicators.
Yeah, but I'm not talking about supplies. I'm talking about ship systems here, all right? We need to, you know, like imagine if we had cleared out half of that quarter's space and instead you used it for increased sensor capacity or increased shielding or increased phaser weaponry. Or increased anything, really. The ship would have been so much more productive.
Well, I think the initial, like, design or so, like, danger, nerd alert here coming up, the initial, like, ship design meeting for that would have been, all right, we can produce a frame that is this big, and we can cram this many people on it, what are our best systems? And the best systems they had could be miniaturized to fit on that ship and have plenty of room left over. I mean, you want to have, like, a quadruple redundancy sensor array?
Well, yes. yes, I do. Because you know, if you look at, like, you know, Romulan ships and Klingon ships, you notice that they are not nearly so big and opulent and, like, you know, and they are clearly much more cramped, which indicates that unless the Romulans and the Klingons intentionally fill their spaceships with, like,
you know what I just realized?
What?
All right, so the D-Daredex Warbird, right?
Yeah.
Warbird, ship of war.
Mm-hmm.
Romulan science vessel. Size of a scout ship. I just realized that.
Uh-huh. I don't understand.
Their science ships are smaller, whereas Starfleet science ships are bigger.
Oh, yeah, that's true. But, like...
Well, that's not really true. The Oberth was really small. The Nova was small.
I mean, the Galaxy-class ship is supposed to be able to do all of those things. It's supposed to be a warship and a science vessel. Mm-hmm. All the more reason why it needs to have more space. and why there's no room for all these opulent quarters. And then it has children on it, and it's like, why does it have children on it? This is the ship that they send.
Because we bring our families to space.
This is the ship that they send, like, you know, into the most dangerous missions they can think of, and it's full of children. it's like, why? I mean,
appropriate command decisions are being made.
Yeah, like, I mean, how many, I don't think that they typically put children on, like, you know, U-boat hunting destroyers in World War II. I don't think that was something that they did. And every once in a while, when I mention this, someone will point out, well, sometimes, like, officers will bring their wives. And it's like, well, yes, but that's very rare. It's usually only a very small number of the ship's officers, and it's also not something you usually do on a ship that you know is going to be facing, like, a new horrible danger every week.
Well, I think it was a sign of the times is what it was for the Federation, because I've heard it remarked that the TNG era, which we're talking, oh, what should it be, like 2340 on to like 2370, just before the Dominion War, as being like the age of diplomacy.
Yeah.
For instance. So it's because there's not a whole lot of conflict going on. Granted, there's like, obviously we had the Borg incident,
Even if we're not talking about like armed conflict, there's lots of natural disasters that the Enterprise is always being sent to deal with. And, you know, sometimes they happen by accident, but then there's the times when, like, the Enterprise is sent to go into this nebula that, like, blew up the last ship that went inside it. And it's like, yeah, you want to send a ship full of children to this. this is an appropriate place for children.
I think it was more of a gesture of saying that the Federation, you know, is actually, you know, it's having a wonderful time right now. There's no a lot of war going on right now. Yeah, so we're bringing our children into space, is what it's supposed to be.
But war is not the only threat in space, as the Enterprise proved over and over and over again.
But we're in the safe, comfy starship. It'll protect
us. Which is on the frontier, being sent into, like, space where no one has gone before, as Picard always mentions at the beginning of every episode.
It's true.
You know, Picard, you don't have to say that every time. I know. I remember. I watched the last episode.
Well, just in case. It's that first episode. You know.
And then, of course, there is the saucer separation aspect, which is kind of funny because it was an effect they could only afford to do twice in the entirety of the run.
It was the first episode of Counter Farpoint and then the Best of Both Worlds, right?
And it sort of brings up, what's the point of the saucer separation? I mean, like, all that happens when the saucer separates is because the saucer section is separated from the warp core, it's now almost completely helpless.
Well, like, my understanding is supposed to be like a lifeboat.
Right, but they have lifeboats. They have escape pods.
Well, it's just a comfier lifeboat.
And really, what if you think about it, all like separating the saucer section before a battle is a terrible idea because the saucer section takes to the two biggest phaser arrays on the ship with it when it separates. And again, because the saucer section is cut off from the warp core, it has no means to escape or defend itself.
It's very intriguing that you actually bring up that point about the saucer separation because that's actually something that's been discussed about in the PvP forums on Star Trek Online.
Really?
Yeah, I actually find the Galaxy, it's the Galaxy Refit is what it is. It's just a Vice Admiral level ship instead of the captain level variant of it. I actually find it's a really good compromise ship because I can tank with it really well and I can separate the saucer and fly around like almost kind of like an escort with the star drive section. But anyway. Yeah,
that's interesting. And if you think about, like, so, you know, it really doesn't leverage that much of a benefit because the ship has escape pods for, like, because, you know, really the only reason to ever use the saucer section, other than that very clever tactic that Riker thought of in The Best of Both Worlds, is if the ship is about to explode. And we saw how long it takes them to evacuate the ship into the saucer section during Generations. It is not a fast thing. It takes a while. And it would be
They did it in less than 6 minutes, didn't they?
Yeah,
that's the window they had, otherwise kabooey.
I mean, imagine if it would just make way more sense to just everyone get in the escape pods. Because, you know, in theory, you would locate escape pods, you know, in a place in locations that would make it easy for everyone to get to. And you could have them all over the ship instead of just everyone run to the front.
You know, actually, most of the escape pods are actually in the saucer section.
Oh, dear. And, like, even...
I'd say most of them, because on the underbelly of the Star Drive section, I think there's, like, a couple rows of them.
And even in Generations, they basically established that the saucer section cannot go fast enough to escape a warp core explosion. What? It defeats the only real reason for having it.
The saucer just got away. There was just a planet in the way.
No, the saucer got hit by the explosion, which then threw it into the gravity well of the planet.
Right.
I'm just saying that, like, if the saucer section, if the whole point of the saucer section is to separate to escape a warp core breach, you would think that it would be fast enough to get away from one, or have enough shields to, for that it wouldn't care. But I mean.
Make escape fast, but impulse engines too slow.
All right, no in jokes, no memes. but the point being that this is a feature that provides almost no benefit and is a huge hindrance because it means that there's this point in the center of the ship that has to be able to separate, which is hugely structurally compromising. If you ever ask someone who's ever tried to make a device that comes apart, the places where it comes apart are always the weakest.
True.
The same reason why when you're fighting someone who's in armor, you always aim for the joints. Because the joints have to move, and that makes them the weakest part. And so there's this point in the center of the ship that if they shoot at, that part is structurally weaker than the rest of the ship.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's this huge it's this huge liability for really no benefit. And so that's, you know, and so the Enterprise D, again, even though I
What's the letter grade you give it?
I'm gonna give it a C minus.
C minus. It looks cool, but
in practice it's not. Mm-hmm. Even though I do like Next Generation, I really like Next Generation, and I end up liking it more than the original series once they got past their season one problems. But as a spaceship, it's just not very good. And then you get to DS9. And the station, Deep Space Nine itself, I love the space station, Deep Space Nine. It is so cool. It is so perfectly designed for what it is, which is a civilian space station with a military contingent. And, like, you know, it's got the big old promenade.
It was an ore processing facility initially, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. And because of that, it's full of these rooms that no one really uses anymore because they were for ore processing.
Uh-huh.
And I really liked those big pylons for docking, because it's like, you need to keep ships away from the central part of the station, because spaceships explode all the time.
All the time in the Star Trek universe.
And you don't want them getting too close to the station.
Nope.
Joking aside, it actually makes a lot of sense to have, like, big arms that, like, ships can dock at without getting too close to the to the inhabited part of the station, because, you know, barring the sort of comical, affinity that spaceships have for exploding in Star Trek, there's also, you know, radiation leaks or just dangerous cargo, or a ship that's just not in very good control of its movement. You know, there's all kinds of reasons why you want them docking kind of farther away. And, like, I really liked the way they kept commenting on Cardassian architecture and how, like, you know, the commander's office is higher up than the rest of the bridge, so everyone has to look up to him. Yeah, I thought that was really cool. It has the habitat rings where everyone lives, which is separate from the place from where all the major systems are. Like, you'll notice no one is living next to the fusion cores, because it doesn't have a warp core, it has fusion cores.
Right, just because it doesn't move anywhere.
Yeah, it doesn't need a warp core. And, like, I also really liked, because the station itself actually has a development arc. In most of the other shows, the ships stay pretty much the same. I guess Voyager eventually incorporates some Borg technology, but, like, you know, the Enterprise D and the Defiant and the original Enterprise, they all stay pretty much the same, whereas the station actually grows and changes over the course of the series. Like, it's...
Well, I know it got, like, its shields back and its weapons up and running, but...
Yeah, well, like, they...
I don't see it look very different, though.
No, I mean, it doesn't look that different. I mean, it looks different in that they, like, they have to clean it up after the first episode when the Cardassians trash it. But, you know, they have to figure out all these weird idiosyncrasies, like, with the ship. They have to get rid of the Cardassian voles. And it just has a really, you know, it has a really neat development, and it just looks so cool.
Mm-hmm.
But then you have the Defiant, which I don't like. Because, first of all, apparently Ben Sisko helped design the Defiant. And it's like, wait, what? Since when is Ben Sisko a ship designer? That's not something you can just step into. That's complicated.
Show me your resume for this, Mr. Sisko.
I get that he was, like, an administrator at the Utopia Planitia shipyards.
Right.
But that doesn't, like, translate into actually being a ship designer.
Right.
Like, it would be one thing if he was, a consultant on the design project that they asked because he had, like, field experience commanding ships.
Well, he wanted to get vengeance back on the Borg is what he wanted to do.
Yes, he did. And then there's the fact that the space station is... The Defiant is just so powerful. Like, absurdly so. Like, they have in the episode Defiant, when Tom Riker, William Riker's clone, steals it, like, they talk about how it can, like, you know, three Cardassian warships aren't even, like, a threat to it. It's like, yeah, whatever. This one Federation ship will take on three Cardassian warships, and they're only concerned that it might slow them down a little bit. And then it's like, oh, look, 10 Cardassian warships. Okay, now maybe we'll have a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're talking. And it's just like, how is it so powerful? I mean, I get that it's overgunned. That's fine. I get that it's...
The ship tears itself apart during drills.
I get that it has that it's overpowered for a ship of this size, but it is absurd. Like, if you watch how easily it chews through Jem'Hadar fighters and, like, through Klingon birds of prey and pretty much anything it comes across, it's just like, why is the ship so powerful? There's no reason for it to be this powerful. It sort of indicates that the only reason the Federation hasn't, like, completely, you know, taken over the entire universe is because they don't really feel like it. Like, they could be making ships this good, but they decided not to, because they were sporting.
Because they decided not to.
And, you know, it felt like it was just a, it was just, like, the writers were like, we need to give them, like, a ship. And then they got super excited. Like, we're going to give them the coolest ship ever, guys.
The coolest ship
ever. It's going to have armor, and its phasers aren't going to be lined. They're going to be, like, little blasting phasers. And it's going to have a cloaking device. And it's going to be called the Defiant. And it's going to be so cool. But as a result, they just ended up creating a ship that was just too powerful. I did like the interior look of it. You know, not to harp on this point or anything, but it didn't have big, comfy quarters.
Nope. And so, Deep Space Nine would what grade would you give?
I would give Deep Space Nine an A.
An A,
and I would give the Defiant like a B plus, maybe
a B plus because it's a warship.
Yeah,
silly little warships.
It didn't have any children on it.
I think you got time for Voyager.
Do I have time for Voyager? Okay, Voyager, worst Starfleet ship ever. all right. First of all, its nacelles move up and down. Like, what's up with that?
I'm warp making geometry, flappy that's why.
With my hands.
You are making flappy. It actually has to do with the warp geometry.
What? Don't say words like that at me. No other starship in the history of forever of ever has had to move its nacelles up and down, but this one does.
Well, I'm just saying, warp geometry. I didn't invent it. I'm just saying, warp geometry is a thing.
It's got these gel packs as its computer, which is supposed to be good, but like we never actually see any kind of benefit from having these gel packs, and they fail at like the drop of a hat.
The ship got a cold once.
Yeah, the ship like got infected by Neelix's cheese.
Yep.
And like the gel packs were dying, and they can't replicate new ones. And it was just like, it was just these gel packs were this huge hindrance that the ship had, and they seem to like have no applicable benefit. And it's also Voyager also really pushed the idea of the weapons array.
Yes, the off button.
The weapons array, it's not really ever decided exactly what a weapons array is, but it's like this place on the ship that when you hit it, all the weapons stop working.
Yeah.
And like Voyager is like even in the first episode in Caretaker, the Voyager's weapons array is hit by the giant Kazon ship, and the weapons all stop working. And it's like, what is this one spot on the ship that they're hitting that is making the weapons stop working? Because like Voyager has weapons all over it. It's got like the two main ones on the big on the. It's not even a saucer section on like the forward wedge. Anyway, so that's why I don't really terribly care for Voyager either. So I'm gonna give Voyager. Maybe a D plus. If I had to give it
does
a
the
letter.
Plus even matter if you're giving it a D?
D plus.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
All right, I think we're about out of time for
we
today.
Are almost out of time. DJ Rockwell's coming up next.
DJ Rockwell's
yes,
be
rad. We yeah, he is so rad. I actually listened to the show afterwards. He's got some pretty good music on there. Does the Nexus, which is really rad. Anyway, I've got some news.
Oh, what's news?
Yeah, we're on iTunes now.
We're on iTunes now?
I've got some kinks to work out of it right now, because right now it's for our website's tagline, it's You're Where It's At, ATT, All Things Trek.
Yeah.
But you can't search for All Things Trek in there yet. I don't know why it did that. So I got to work a couple kinks out before I can make that work.
So, but we are there. If you're able to find
we
us.
We are there.
And finally, I think next week we're going to be talking about Star Trek video games.
We are going to be talking about Star Trek video games.
Which is going to be an enormous amount of research.
That's right. It's probably going to take a couple episodes of months through all that.
Yeah, prepare yourselves.
That's right. All right, folks, it's been a pleasure. You've been listening to DJ Bob.
And I'm DJ Oren.
And this has been All Things Trek.